A Hero's Journey is a podcast filled with spoilers. We recommend reading the book each week before you listen, but we trust you to make your own decision.
Hi, and welcome to A Hero's Journey, a literary podcast. I'm your host and judge, Jack, and I'm here with my haughty horcruxes.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
Each week, we look at a different book through Joseph Campbell's monomyth.
This week on A Hero's Journey, we're discussing Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, the seventh book and final book in the Harry Potter series. This book follows Harry, now coming of age, from when he leaves the Dursleys for the final time until his final confrontation with Voldemort. Through this, Harry, Ron, and Hermione travel together looking for Horcruxes in secret after the Ministry has fallen and been taken over by Voldemort and his forces. Throughout the journey, they face many struggles, eventually finding the three Horcruxes, the Locket, the Cup, and the Diadem, and destroying them. In a final confrontation at Hogwarts, Harry nobly tries to sacrifice himself, and in doing so, realizes that he was one of the final Horcruxes, and now Voldemort is vulnerable. During a duel, Voldemort is killed by his own reflecting spell, and Harry, Hermione, and the rest of the crew go on to live happily ever after in the epilogue 19 years later.
We begin this final trip to Privet Drive the way that it began, with seven people disguised as Harry Potter.
Yeah. So for our journey this week, it is going to be to defeat old Moldy-Voldy, or old Voldemort, as he is more commonly known. And to start for this, Harry has to leave his home, flying from the Dursleys, like Jack said, with seven other people disguised as him. This is the start of the journey because, one, instantly, the Harrys are faced with Voldemort chasing them and the Death Eaters chasing them. And it kind of reinforces that Harry is leaving the whole world behind. The Dursleys are leaving. Harry is leaving. No one is going to be coming back to this house. For a refusal of the call, this is Harry's time at the Burrow and Bill and Fleur's wedding. During this, Harry isn't really searching for Horcruxes. He's not doing anything specific to fight Voldemort. He is spending time with his family. It's not a terrible thing that he's doing. I think it's a very important thing for him to spend time with Ron, Hermione, Jenny, all the Weasleys, and the Order, but it is not working towards the goal of the quest. For meeting of the mentor, I think we can look to Dumbledore for one final time, hopefully, and the will that Dumbledore has, giving Harry the gift of the Snitch, which contains the Resurrection Stone, as well as the Sword of Gryffindor, or attempting to give the Sword of Gryffindor to Harry. And the gifts for Ron and Hermione are beneficial for not only them, but Harry as well in the future. For crossing the threshold, I think that this is travel to Grimmauld Place. This is after the Ministry has fallen, so Harry can really no longer go back to Hogwarts. And it's a nice contrast going from the safety of the Burrow to the danger and the fear of going into Grimmauld Place, where they know Snape can access, where the house is, again, adversarial towards them. And it's not the familiar home of Hogwarts, although it is a familiar place. For the belly of the whale, I think this is when Harry, Ron, Hermione discover who R.A.B. is. Regulus Augustus Black, I think, might have the middle name wrong. And that creature knows where the locket was. So it starts them on the trail of defeating Voldemort, whereas before they didn't have any leads. Now they have a plan to start moving forward.
All right. So obviously you're your quest is the only one we could possibly go on. But moving into your call to adventure, I'm going to kind of start at the beginning by talking about your last point. You've talked about how they don't have any real leads or anything to go off of, but yet they're still being called to the adventure. If they don't have any way to move forward, but yet they start anyway. So it feels like, why isn't the adventure just starting at what you've put as the belly of the whale?
I feel like we kind of covered this in our last discussion, though. This is the call to adventure in this book, but the impetus for this journey started at the end of the last one when they declared their intent.
Correct. So why is this the call to adventure then?
Because they just went on a break. Harry spent X number of weeks just kind of bumming around London being safe. Well, Privet Drive. I get your point that we go into sort of an extended period of not knowing what to do, but this is certainly a shift from a summer of waiting and sort of, I guess I'm bumping into one second, Alex. I guess thinking about it more from Zach's perspective, I was going to say that this seems to be the first moment that Harry sort of takes charge of his own fate, as he kind of dictated he would in the last book. But this is somebody else's plan. Does that change it for you? Because it kind of feels like it's changing it for me.
No, it does it for me, because when he leaves the Dursleys, he's going directly into danger, which is different from how the other books have started. You know, in like book two, there was the danger with Dobby being present, but that was not as real a danger as this is, where they start the adventure with Voldemort chasing after them and Death Eaters trying to attack them.
Which book do they start with? Isn't it Prisoner of Azkaban, where he gets attacked by a Dementor on the train?
That's Order of the Phoenix. Order of the Phoenix is attack at home. Prisoner of Azkaban is attack on the train. I guess circling back to Zach's other part of the point, though, is what makes this the call to this adventure? It's definitely the call to adventure of this book, but if our quest is the final defeat of Voldemort, what makes this part of it?
During the flight from the Dursleys, Harry directly duels Voldemort, correct? He's flying with Hagrid and he duels Voldemort.
Harry's wand duels Voldemort, but yeah.
So I think it serves as a reminder, like, they're connected. They have to fight. The connection with them is beyond what is known, because, you know, Harry's wand, like you said, it acts of its own accord to attack him. So it's just, for me, reinforcing the battle that they're going to have, that they have to have, and the connection between them.
I think I'll give you that. The fact that he fights Voldemort here puts it squarely back in the realm of this particular journey. It's not the hunt for the Horcruxes, but that's not your journey. The journey is defeating Voldemort, and this is our first clash, and it resets the stakes.
All right.
You sold me initially, Zach. Yeah. Alex got me back there.
All right. For the refusal of the call, I feel like this is good, but as you stated previously, it's not like he's got a solid lead, right? So I feel like this is his, I'm just trying to be safe and enjoy the things that I have, as opposed to, like, and if something comes up, which it does, I'm going to follow that lead. But until I have a sort of breakthrough, this is the only thing I can be doing. Well, it's like the first opportunity that's presented to him is really what he takes.
No. During an attack.
Yeah, Zach, let's look at this a little different. Pretend that instead of getting word that he needs to search for Horcruxes, Harry was given a map to treasure, but the map doesn't correlate with anything that he knows. Like, it doesn't have a good compass, no landmarks that he can identify. So once Harry has this map, he takes it, he looks at it, says, this is a good map. and then he goes and parties, goes to a wedding, instead of, you know, going and looking for identifying landmarks that would correlate with the map. That's basically what Harry is doing. Dumbledore has given him clues through Voldemort's past and that information. So Harry has that map without landmarks associated. And instead of going to look for landmarks to associate it with it, he just kind of goes to a wedding.
Okay. I mean, I don't mind that comparison. It's just, I don't know if he could have gotten much information if he started right out the gate, but I see what you mean.
I think one of the easy sells for me on why this is a refusal is because, not to jump on one of my old favorite horses, things that the movie kind of does a little bit better here is they do give Harry that scene where he decides to leave in the middle of the night. And that really puts into context that that's what he should be doing. And they're sticking around to the wedding because that is an agreement that Ron, Harry, and Hermione have made. They've set that as they're going to go and start after that. One more summer of innocence-ish.
Yeah, but we don't often get to choose those.
No, and shockingly, it doesn't work out the way they envisioned. Most of this journey does not.
For the meeting with the mentor, Dumbledore is not actually present at any point in this book, including the weird visions at the end. So I have a very hard time having his like will and the gift giving. If anything, it's more like an early higher power, but I don't feel like it's, you know, direct enough and able to adapt in a way. It's just sort of, hey, here's this gift that I set out for you in the case of my untimely death. And sure, it's going to be useful, but it's not like, and not anything like having me here in a direct way.
So if we haven't done this for a long time, but if we go back to our definition, once the hero's committed to the quest, his magical guide and helper will appear or become known. And then they will present the hero with one or more talismans that will aid him later in the quest. So if we go with the become known and Dumbledore revealing his gifts through the will.
And I'm sorry. So you're saying Dumbledore wasn't previously known?
The will specifically that these gifts.
So the will is given.
So the piece of paper is the
method. Yes, of course, obviously. No, Dumbledore wrote the will. You can't tell me that that's not Dumbledore making himself known, making the gifts that he's giving to them known.
So really, he's just being the mentor from the last book, like he already was.
Doesn't make him any less a mentor for this one, in my opinion.
Except the part where he's dead.
He just has to make himself known, remind everybody
that is a double doornail. Yeah.
So does that make him Voldemort's mentor of this book as well, because he gives Voldemort the gift of the Elder Wand?
Oh, yeah.
Join us next week when we discuss that.
Well, I understand what you're going for here, Alex. I think that this book is a lot about Harry stepping outside of the bounds of his previous mentors, right? They have an option of taking Lupin on. They don't. They kill off Moody, as he's sort of the next most logical mentor. Dumbledore's already gone. I think this is Harry stepping outside of mentorship in the traditional sense. He, Hermione, and Ron are a team. Dumbledore is bestowed upon them final gifts that do end up helping them. But I don't think we'd be comfortable with, right, the ancient prophecy that told you what to do at the last second being the mentor. Even if it's responsible for you having the magic sword and the knowledge that you need at the last second. So I don't think I'm willing to accept Dumbledore here. I will, however, potentially accept him for, say, a creator later on.
For the crossing the threshold, you've talked about how it's still familiar, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the primary danger here?
Murder. That's, yeah, Snape knows where they are. Snape could tell Voldemort where they are. I mean, he doesn't know where they are, but he knows the location. He can share that information with Voldemort. The house is still adversarial. creature is there, creature who has to obey Harry, but in the past has been very sneaky and shared information leading to deaths of members of the Order. The ministry has fallen and now they're having to hide out. That's the reason they're going to Grimmauld Place. A bunch of dangers here.
Okay. But we know Snape isn't a baddie.
We don't yet. Harry doesn't either.
Yeah. I know we don't yet. But if it's perceived danger, I guess, as opposed to actual.
And there's the great line there with them during this time at Grimmauld Place where they think about how everyone else is getting on the train and going to Hogwarts. Life is different now. They're fugitives, they're outlaws. Wanted in connection to the murder of Albus Dumbledore.
Yeah, for the Belly of the Whale. I like how it's the first sort of hint that they get. What I don't like is that it doesn't open necessarily immediate doors. I would have liked a belly where it was less information based and more like almost like a trial or almost like an immediate scene change. You know what I mean? I just don't like that it's almost wholly informational in nature.
I mean, it is wholly informational, but I think that the information directly leads to a scene change, and it definitely leads to a change in attitude. They're just kind of camping out, and then once they have this information, the whole attitude shifts. They start planning and plotting. It does kind of lead to a scene change where they start looking at the ministry and, I guess this doesn't happen right away, but they start looking at the ministry and ways to get in there. And it does ultimately force them to leave Grimmauld Place relatively quickly in the course of the book.
Congratulations, Alex.
Yeah, I don't have much more.
That's going to bring us to a close on our departure with only that mentor missing, regardless of what Alex says. And putting us off on a normal, quite good Harry Potter start. 4 out of 5. Coming into the initiation, we come to the name of my new old rock funk band, The Locket, The Cup, and The Diadem.
Yeah, and that is exactly what the Road of Trials is. I'm very lucky.
Funk rock band?
Yes, I am very lucky in that the book kind of just laid out 3 things that Harry has to accomplish: destroying the locket, destroying the cup, and the diadem. All of these are necessary for the goal, ultimate goal of defeating Voldemort, and they're all super challenging. Getting the locket from Umbridge requires sneaking into the ministry and facing down the might of the ministry and Voldemort's forces to get away. For the cup, they have to break into Gringotts' vault, which has happened 1 other time, and it was only Voldemort who did it. And for the diadem, they have to sneak into Hogwarts, face down the Karrows, face a war, essentially, to get this. And the destruction of them isn't easy either. We only see the destruction of the locket on screen here. And Ron and Hermione do take care of the cup. The diadem is destroyed kind of accidentally, but I think just getting to them in themselves is enough of a challenge to fit on a Road of Trials here. For our meeting with the higher power, this is Snape and giving the gift of the Sword of Gryffindor to Harry, which is what allows Harry and Ron to destroy the locket. I really like this meeting with the higher power because it is clearly a meeting with the higher power in my mind. Snape is there giving them the sword that they need to complete the quest, but it is a little shadowed in that Harry doesn't know that Snape is doing it until later in the book. For our Temptress, this is, I think, the the just decision that Harry makes not to raise Voldemort for the wand. I have a couple of quotes here. The Temptress is going after the Deathly Hallows. So Harry has the temptation to go after these to make himself the master of death like Dumbledore did. And just two quick quotes. One, the enormity of his decision not to raise Voldemort to the wand still scared Harry. He could not remember ever before choosing not to act. He was full of doubts. Doubts that Ron could not help voicing whenever they were together. And then later, just to emphasize how much of a temptation this would be to Harry and how much of it was to Voldemort, or excuse me, to Dumbledore, when Harry is having the dream sequence, Dumbledore says, "Can you forgive me? Can you forgive me for not trusting you, for not telling you? Harry, I only feared that you would fail as I had failed. I only dreaded that you would make my mistakes. I crave your pardon, Harry. I have known for some time now that you are a better man." And then Dumbledore says, "The Hollows, a desperate man's dream. Real and dangerous, a lure for fools." So I can't really think of a better temptation here. For our atonement with the Creator, I think there are two scenes that kind of together can be made into the atonement with the Creator. They're both relating to Dumbledore, but the first is Snape's memories, where we see a lot of Snape and Dumbledore's discussions about Harry and how Dumbledore has set up Snape to protect Harry and what his goals for Harry are. And then the discussion with Dumbledore that takes place inside Harry's mind, I think, allows him to come to an understanding with his memory of Dumbledore, at the very least, that he's been struggling with for the whole book since learning that he doesn't know everything about Dumbledore. He comes to an understanding, at least within himself, about what Dumbledore means to him and how he can still relate to him as his creator. For the apotheosis, this is a realization that Harry has, that he can either pass on or return to life during his conversation in King's Cross Station. And for the ultimate boon, this is clearly Voldemort dying from the rebounding spell that he tried to kill Harry with.
So I have no problem with the locket, the cup, and the diadem being the trials. It's fairly straightforward to me. So for the meaning of the higher power, at this point, Harry's innate distrust of Snape, does that nullify his ability to be a higher power? Or because we've had higher powers in the past who've been even antagonistic on occasion against our heroes, it doesn't matter.
We've had them in the past that have been in, right? What always comes to mind is more gaze in Eye of the World. We're very fine with the higher powers being, as long as they're not the outright villain, I think we're fine with them.
For the Temptress, I have a lot of problems with this. And the primary one is that you're using a dream sequence that doesn't actually, that it's entirely built of Harry's subconscious.
No. We, establishing rules, the dream sequence, we have to count it only as Harry's own internal thoughts on things. But that's fine here, because frankly, the Temptress is Harry's own desire to pursue the Hollows, not the Horcruxes. And Harry says it multiple times that he wants to go do it, but that the right thing to do is not follow down Dumbledore's path. And his own mind confirms that to him.
You can't justify an external spirit, Dumbledore, saying it's a good thing you didn't do this, when it's just really just Harry patting himself on his own back.
Right, but it's Harry patting himself on the back for not giving in to his temptation.
Well, what if the temptation was the right thing to do?
It wasn't. Harry won.
It wasn't. We know for a fact that it wasn't the right thing to do. Harry would have lost had he done it.
I would have done it.
Well, you would have lost.
I would have sent other people to kill the Horcrux.
You would have died. You would have gotten to Hogwarts, been murdered by Dementors, and Voldemort would have killed you with the Elder Wand because you didn't have a chance to fight Draco yet and claim it's the Legions. On to the Atonement.
All right, so my primary problem with the Atonement, beyond the fact that you're trying to double dip here, is that Voldemort should be Harry's creator.
Nope, moving on. Harry reaches peace with his father, surrogate father figure in his own visions of the imagination of the afterlife. I am fine with that as an Atonement.
Voldemort should be his creator.
Nope, moving on.
Little baby evil Voldemort thing in the movie. All right. For the apotheosis, this always felt kind of muddy for me, both when watching the movie and when reading the books. I know we're not really doing movie stuff, but I don't feel like you get this choice, even though it may have seemed to Harry like you did.
Yeah, I don't really think he had the option to not come back.
Yeah, I think from a story perspective, he has to come back. I think from, I don't know, a medical magic pseudoscience perspective, like he was either going to come back or not come back. I don't think the will of his subconscious was a deciding factor in his resurrection.
But
I mean, no, Harry, you're a doctor.
Harry says that. I mean,
I know what Harry says through Dumbledore in his own mind.
If we have to think of this as Harry's, you know, subconscious talking to himself, I have no problem with accepting that he could have let go of his body, his spirit could have passed beyond. We know that there is at least a moment for wizards where they can, you know, when they die, choose to be ghosts, or
they can panic make a ghost.
Yeah, so there is that moment, right?
But the Harry moment didn't become a ghost. He was alive, and he was never not alive.
But maybe he could have passed on. Maybe this is what happens to ghosts, and they can choose to stay or.
I don't know, this seems like a lot of maybes.
Then why didn't he become a ghost?
Because of the love and protection
of his magic. Mother again. They really pulled that trump card out.
I get your point, Alex. It's hard to argue with the explicit text of the novel that it says he gets a pick to return. I think maybe Zach and I are both a little more opposed to this because it's kind of weak when it comes up, right? It's a little classical as where like a refusal to return, but it's not, they don't even ghost Dumbledore or mind Dumbledore doesn't even go, yeah, you can pass on and it'll be somebody else's problem. He just goes, you can do whatever it is that other souls do.
I think Harry has enough to say, you know, Ron, Hermione, Neville, all know that they have to kill the snake, and then Dumbledore will be, I keep mixing up Voldemort and Dumbledore.
It's almost like he's his, it's almost like he's his creator.
Well, then Voldemort will be vulnerable now. So there is, I think, enough.
I have to give you the point on principle, but I don't like it.
I don't like the point or your principles.
We're gonna argue the ultimate boon here.
No, the ultimate boon, I suppose.
I think that Voldemort is still alive in the spirit of
www.voldemorts.notdead.com.
I think, and hear me out, this is a bit of a fringe conspiracy theory floating around, folks, but I think Voldemort conceived a child with Bellatrix Lestrange who showed no visible signs of pregnancy multiple times.
Even though
Harry Potter claims.
Moving on.
I just don't think that Harry knows what a pregnant woman looks like.
See, and I think that he put little clones of himself around the universe, Harry Skywalker will have to go.
And
to,
I think in
moving
an
on.
Unspecified video game, they will reveal that in Fortnite, they're going to reveal
the Harry Potter Fortnite crossover.
That's going to bring us to a close on a perfect classical Harry Potter initiation. Even if I am not a huge fan of this apotheosis, it does technically meet the marks. coming back to Hogwarts one final time to do one last scene better in the movie by cracking the Elder Wand over our knee and throwing it into a river. We come to the return. I've always wondered what would happen. Like, Harry's got to teach his kids to duel at some point. If one of them disarms him, do they accidentally become the commander of the Elder Wand?
But does the Elder Wand, like, could you fix it?
Well, in the books, he doesn't snap it. He just puts it back in Dumbledore's tomb.
Yeah, that's true. Never mind.
Like,
that is a good point.
Albus Severus just disarms him in a screaming match.
I'm pretty sure that Harry has been disarmed in his career as an Aurora.
Yeah, as an Aurora. Yeah, he works a dangerous job. There is another master of the Elder Wand.
Yes.
Also, we're still not.
And is he like
Fantastic Beasts canon? But we know that you can lose wielding the Elder Wand because, you know, Grindelwald lost holding it.
Oh, I didn't even know he got it. I didn't see any of those. Is that how Dumbledore got it?
Yeah, he took it from Grindelwald, we're told explicitly, and we know that. Anyway, Alex takes into this return. What are your points? Why are they bad?
For our refusal of the return, I think that this is the time where Harry is in King's Cross talking with Dumbledore. He is essentially one. Voldemort has destroyed the Horcrux in Harry. Harry has the opportunity to come back and continue to fight, and he is essentially one, but he sits there and contemplates moving on. For our magical flight, I think that this is the time that Harry spends under the cloak. So after Voldemort marches everyone up to Hogwarts and the battle resumes, and Harry is under the cloak sneaking around trying to position himself to best fight Voldemort. That's his magical flight. And the cloak is super magical, more magical than any other cloak ever was. So I think it fits. For our rescue from without, I have to look to Neville here and Neville killing the snake. This is the one Horcrux that Harry hadn't been able to destroy yet. And without Neville, he would have had a much harder time, nigh impossible time, defeating Voldemort like he did. For the crossing of the return threshold, I think this is Harry repairing his wand. This signifies that he's returning to his normal life. He's repairing his wand. He's going back to what he was. He's going to go back to Jenny. He's going to continue living his life with his friends. I would assume he has to return to school to do that final year, although that would probably be pretty weird for him. And he's able to share with the world the knowledge that Voldemort is defeated. And this is not something he shares with the world, but that the Elder Wand is safe with Dumbledore and there are no more masters once Harry dies a natural death, having never been disarmed ever in his career. For our master of two worlds and freedom to live, I think we have to look to the 19 years later epilogue. The master of two worlds, Harry has defeated Voldemort. He's become an Auror in his own right, fighting the dark wizards continuously. And he's become a family man. He has his children, his wife, his close friends who he spends time with, Ron, Hermione, Neville. Even Malfoy, he seems to be not friends with, but they have a respectful relationship. So I think that those two worlds, defeating Voldemort and being the dark wizard fighter, and then the finding the family that he has been searching for his whole life, are the two worlds. And for the freedom to live, we hear Harry say his scar has not hurt in 19 years since Voldemort was defeated, which signifies that he is no longer bound to Voldemort. There's no longer a connection between them. And no more reason for him to have to fight.
And yet fighting he continues to do, for it is all he knows.
All right, so for the refusal of the return, I don't like it for many of the reasons we already talked about. I don't think he has a choice in the matter. I don't think this sort of otherworldliness is anything but his own self-conscious. I don't think he's actually refusing to return. I think he's just undergoing like a comatose state that he breaks out of. I don't think there's any intent or decision-making that happens in it.
I think that's fair. This is the hardest point for me to try and find, right? Because that I typically want the refusal to return to be happening at the same time or after the ultimate boon, and for the hero to think that they've lost. And the only time where Harry thinks that he's lost or might die is before the ultimate boon is achieved. So this is the hardest point for me to try and come up with in the whole of the 17 steps that I came up with.
Alex showed weakness, Zach pounced.
So for the magical flight, this is where I was actually going to bring up the timing specifically, is that if the ultimate boon is him dying from the rebound spell, how can the positioning to prepare for the rebound spell be the magical flight?
We've allowed magical flights to be to the final destination.
But you certainly can't allow the rescue to happen before the ultimate boon.
Yes, we have.
And so for our West rescue from without.
we have assuredly allowed that before.
Why? It's dumb.
Because without Neville's actions, Harry isn't ready for the ultimate, right? It's we've definitely allowed the rescue to be, you get to the final corridor to the boss's battle room, and the big guy steps forward and says, I'll take on the grunts, you go ahead.
And I think it's important to highlight Neville's contribution.
I mean, no doubt. And Neville is the chosen one, but
yes.
And a hottie with a body, but
yeah, but they lucked out on that. That did not have to be the case. For the crossing of the return threshold, I don't mind the wand repairing.
Rapero!
I think that's fine. I think it's a decent enough, there's plenty of things you could use. His interactions with the other characters being probably a little better for me, but I guess since they were part of the majority of the conflict, you could say that it's not separated enough. The problem I have, the freedom to live, I'm going to skip past for a second. The freedom to live is fine because
you don't have to skip past the freedom to live. The Master of Two Worlds
I'm said I'm skipping forward over the Master of Two Worlds for a second, just to adjust the freedom to live. I've got no problem with that. Harry gets to live his own life as he sees fits and no longer has to worry about every defensive against the Dark Arts teacher trying to kill him and all that crap. The Master of Two Worlds, looking at, you're saying he's family man and accomplished wizard are the two worlds?
Yeah, essentially. He found his family and established his family, and he defeated the Dark Wizards, and he's a Dark Wizard fighter.
So, we don't know what kind of Dark Wizard fighter he is my biggest qualm with this, right? You could just be like, everyone at the office just thinks he's an okay wizard hunter and they just think he got lucky or whatever with Voldemort. We don't know that he's the best dark wizard fighter. We just know that he works for the Ministry of Magic, which is a real doozy since he spent his half of his life hating the Ministry of Magic.
Harry 100% should have been the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher at Hogwarts. You are correct.
And like done summer job as an on-call and I also wonder if there's like dark wizards who just thought Voldemort was like an uppity baddie and that like they'll be famous because they'll be the one who killed Harry, so they specifically go after Harry and Harry's family and friends to try to, you know, that sort of, if I can beat Harry and Voldemort can beat Harry, therefore I am better than Voldemort.
But that movie trope where you establish how badass someone is by having them kill someone badass.
So I wonder if they like go after Harry specifically because of that, or maybe Harry just doesn't accomplish much. That's the primary thing. And then second, he has, yes, gotten his family, but we get very little insight into the quality and or...
I am sure that Harry is a great father in those 1.5 lines of dialogue, and there is no canonical proof.
Like, I really want Harry... I really want Harry to be the master, right? Because I'm happy that he has his freedom to live his life as he chooses, but we don't get anything in the books themselves that tell us that he has actually mastered the things that we're trying to attribute to him.
So I think we have to look to Harry's character throughout the books and his abilities throughout the books, and nothing in the seven books tell me, oh man, Harry's not going to be a good dad, or Harry isn't actually going to be a good wizard.
He gets a lot of kids killed. That would be a bad attribute of a father.
Point for Zach. That would be a bad attribute of a father. Body count's a little high. Working a dangerous FBI job where the serial killers might come after you and your own, also not great dad behavior.
Naming kids after not Hagrid, bad father behavior.
Setting ridiculous standards, being a celebrity dad.
Having McGonagall, or any of the teachers probably look down on. And
Alex, could you imagine the expectations on a Potter child that ends up in Slytherin? What would the community think?
Well, that's a whole different issue.
The good news is that the Sorting Hat factors in choice, and there's no way that one of Harry's kids would pick Slytherin.
Because he spent six books hating their guts, even though he was almost in them. Listen, we're getting obviously on a tangent.
Almost in their guts?
Alex, I really want him to be the Master of Two Worlds because I think he's earned it. I just don't think we see it.
Can you reiterate for our listeners what you want to declare the Two Worlds officially as?
So, family man, I guess this would be the one way to phrase it. Having his family, his found family, and then dark wizard fighter or defeater of Voldemort.
So dark wizard fighter, I don't think you get to just kill Hitler and then rest on your laurels for the rest of your life.
I don't know. I think
there should be a pension. There should be a pension. There was a fund. There was a defeat Voldemort fund, and he gets to live out of that the rest of his life.
I'll give you father, family, right? Harry has had the thing that he felt he was missing his whole life. Dark wizard fighter. He is an aura. It is what he said. The books definitely want that to be a mastery. Alex, can you say with a straight face that based on everything we see in these books, you think Harry is actually good at fighting dark wizards, or is he very lucky and has Hermione to help him? Because she is not an aura with them.
So we actually
and Ron just hang around the office drinking beer and pretending to hunt wizards?
We actually have canonical proof that there is one thing Harry is better at than Hermione, and it is fighting dark wizards.
It is the owls against the dark arts.
Correct. Harry gets the outstanding owl, and Hermione exceeds expectations. So I have canonical proof that Harry is good at defense against the dark arts and fighting dark wizards.
He is better than Hermione at defense against the dark arts. Let me ask you, if the job of being an auror involves investigative work, like we could imagine being like an FBI agent, I think we can all agree that's a decent comparison, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Do you think Harry would make a good FBI agent without Hermione? Or is he really good at gun work?
And if I want to get very specific, the only reason he beat Voldemort was dying from the rebound spell. It's not like it was a... It's not like he really had a...
Yeah, he never even mastered the ability to cast without speaking. Voldemort and he just are both like, fuck it, announcement!
It seemed like another episode
of... Duels don't make that much sense in concept. Like, Voldemort versus Dumbledore is good because they're both silently trying to, like, outthink the other one with crazy spells, but all of Harry and Voldemort's duels are just... Blast him.
What's the name of the guy who turns himself into the chair in the movie?
Slughorn.
Yeah. Slughorn. Isn't he like a super strong wizard and they never even really talk about it?
He's part of the group of three that are dueling Voldemort briefly.
Because there's not too many wizards that do silent
casting. No. I mean, Harry, again, does cast at least equally with Voldemort in the last like blow for blow, but the movie does a better job of making it seem like they're on equal footing in that last fight. But Alex, okay,
we're fine to give him the freedom to live, so we can put that in.
We're fine on the freedom to live, but Alex, in order for me to give you this mastery, I need you to tell me that you think Harry Potter would be a good FBI field agent.
He's just going to tell you that because he wants the point.
And that's fine. Alex can compromise his integrity if he wants to lie to me. I accept all lies.
So I will go to my favorite show depicting the FBI, Criminal Minds.
That's not the best show. The best show White is Collar The Blacklist. Is the
best. White Collar.
Blacklist.
White Collar.
All right. Well, one of these shows had 15 seasons and two of them didn't. So I'm going to go with mine.
Wow, what prejudice.
I think we could compare.
Does that make Grey's Anatomy the most medically relevant show, Alex?
No, just most people's favorite medical drama. I think we could compare Harry to a Derek Morgan in Criminal Minds. So if you're familiar with the show, you already know what I'm talking about, but he is intelligent. He's not the most intelligent. There is Spencer Reed. He is resourceful. He's not the most resourceful. That'd be Penelope Garcia. He is strong. That is Derek Morgan's defining feature. He is strongest. He is stronger than anyone else. So I think we could look to Harry. He is fairly resourceful. He is fairly intelligent, and he is stronger in these magical skills than other people.
What I've learned from this is that Alex is a bigger fan of Criminal Minds than I knew.
I've never watched a single episode, so none of those analogies made sense to me.
I'll believe it. I don't know if Alex believes it, but Alex sold me well.
I believe it entirely.
That is going to close us out on our return with just that refusal to return missing, leaving us with a final score of 15 out of 17, which leaves, unsurprisingly, our final venture to Hogwarts with Harry Potter our final venture to Hogwarts with Harry as a modern day hero. Coming in our closing thoughts, we've got one more Harry Potter themed episode. If you haven't caught our indications, we're going to talk about Voldemort's descent into villainy. Have a few more things to talk about, kind of like our episode we did on the Jackal. So just talking about the Deathly Hallows as a whole for a book. The pace is slower, but I loved it when it first came out. It managed to be a relatively satisfying ending to a monolithic series, which is impressive in its own right. As a later reader, because Harry Potter comes off with a soft magic system, I think the Deathly Hallows catches even more flaws than a lot of the other books because so much of the world is established that the cracks begin to show a little bit, but it's still fun. It's still great. I still love the twists and turns rereading. I don't even hate the long drawn out periods of nothing because as I'm reading it, especially because I've got a big Harry Potter omnibus on my phone, I just watch it ticking down and I'll click on it and I'll be like, oh, I'm starting to get bored. Oh, wait, there's only 5% of the series left. And then I start treasuring it all over again.
For me, this is a super fun book to come back to. I love Harry Potter, as I'm sure everyone who's listening can tell by now. I've loved it for years since I started reading it in grade school. And this was a great conclusion to the series. I remember reading this book in one day. We got it at the midnight release and I finished it the next day before midnight. My family actually bought 3 copies so I could read it, my brother could read it, my dad could read it, and then my mom could read it whenever the first one of us finished. So it was a great conclusion to the series. And like Jack said, I always appreciate it a little bit more because I know it's coming to the close.
My story is similar to Alex's. I went and picked this up at a Target at midnight, and it was the night before I was set to go to summer camp. So I picked the book up and read it in the car ride home.
and the night beforehand. Didn't really get any sleep, but managed to read in about 4 hours. And which at the time was pretty fast for Gunzak. And really enjoy a lot of the scene selection, specifically in this book. I think the settings for the different conflicts and discoveries are really impactful. I think it does enough of referencing to things that they built up throughout the series that makes it really satisfying. I really like the Snape progression. I really, really like the Neville progression in this book. That's been, you know, hinted at throughout the series. I could have done without the Dumbledore resurfacing, which is really weird because I don't remember thinking that as a kid. But in this reread, I didn't need Dumbledore anymore in the seventh book.
That's maybe because you, like Harry, have grown up, Zach.
Yeah, I mean, that's entirely plausible, but I wouldn't bet on it. Yeah, so overall, very much enjoyed it. Those are just my general thoughts.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoy Hero's Journey as much as we love doing it, don't forget to leave us a rating and review wherever you get your podcasts from. If the place you hear us is Spotify, you can respond to our weekly polls that we put up and give us some feedback. We love to hear from you, and we hope that you enjoy the show as much as we love to do it. As always, I have been your host and judge, Jack.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
And join us next week as we come back to look at the adventures of Lord Voldemort.
Tom Riddle.
Morty Morty.
Yay!
Oh, thank you.
Is the Harry Potter theme song copyrighted that we can't use like 10 seconds in the final episode? Probably.